Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Cindy S. Solomon coming to you today on June 18th with the Global Product Management Talk. The Global Product Management Talk is curated for passionate product professionals and business owners who want to teach, learn, and network about managing products, including agile practitioners involved with developing, designing, and launching products, brands, marketing, project management, and everyone who cares about the entire product management lifecycle process to guarantee successful products and companies. Product Management Talk is a weekly mini product camp Socratic discussion on Twitter using the hashtag pound, PRODMGMT, PALK. As you can hear, my voice is under the weather today, so I want to quickly thank our sponsor, the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management, which is founded in 1998 and promotes worldwide excellence in product management education, providing value to individual members, corporate members, and sponsors with training, education, certification, and professional networking opportunities. The AIPMM 7-phase product lifecycle framework is a vendor-independent product management and product marketing standard that takes into account best practices used in a wide range of companies and industries. Please visit our sponsor at www.aipmm.com for more information about upcoming webinars and trainings. Today we're talking about the value of fanatical support with Rob Legat, who is at KRATR. He's the Chief Disruption Officer at Rackspace. He will be talking about the crucial necessity of knowing your customer and understanding how to address everything from a crisis to the everyday question quickly and effectively. Rob is a serial entrepreneur, software developer, and customer junkie, and we are fortunate to have Tim C. Johnson as co-host, who's a product marketing expert and author of the It's About Value product marketing blog. You can find it at value-prodmktg.blogspot.com. I'm going to turn it over to our co-host, Tim Johnson, before I lose my voice entirely to fill you in, and I will be tweeting at prodmgmttalk. Welcome, Rob Legat, and welcome, Tim.
Well, thank you, Cindy. It sounds like you just got it in under the wire there. Happy to sit in for you, and hope you feel better soon. Rob, I'm really curious. I'm very interested about the topic today. The concept of support and going over the top shouldn't be limited simply to the tech space. I had an incident recently where I ordered some parts from name brand retailer for my barbecue, and long story short, they couldn't figure out what the house number was to send it to. I shipped them all the way from Georgia out here to California. UPS couldn't find my house. They apparently couldn't find my phone number on the invoice to call me and ask me where my house was. And the whole thing got sent back and nobody told me about it. And 3 or 4 weeks later, I call them up, say, hey, where's my parts? And they say, oh, we send them back.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That's actually pretty typical of where customers get disappointed, right? It's either a broken promise or a broken process.
Yeah, and so taking it from customer service up to social support, I find it a very interesting concept. I've known about Rack for a number of years through my day jobs, and I've always been impressed with what you guys have been able to do, both as a partner and as a customer. Why don't we kick it off with what's the latest news from Rackspace, and what is social support?
All right. Not going to make this a Rackspace commercial, so we'll keep the news kind of brief. We did just release our next generation cloud, so that's some really big news, built on OpenStack, which is the open source cloud that Rackspace and NASA teamed up on, and now there's over 100 companies involved, including people like Dell, HP, and so on. So enough about that. Social support is, the way I define it here at Rackspace, is a team of people that takes care of our customers on any property other than Rackspace.com. So if they're on the internet, on a blog post, if they are writing a Quora question, if it's a LinkedIn group, Twitter, Facebook, anything that is not on the rackspace.com website, my group is responsible for. So what we actually have figured out is that it makes a lot of sense to go find your customers where they're already at instead of trying to force them to come to you. And, you know, I think last time I looked, we had 23,000 followers on Twitter. That's just on the main at Rackspace account. If you take all of our various brands and accounts and combine them, it's well over 35,000. So that's, you know, we've got 180,000 customers now, and, you know, 35,000 of them are following us on social media. That's a pretty impressive percent. So ignoring them just isn't an option. So instead of ignoring them, we decided to embrace them. So I was hired as a director of software development for the cloud, and I just started using Twitter and started talking to customers and asking them, you know, what they liked and didn't like about the product. And I just found out I really liked talking to customers. And the next thing I knew, I was asked to build a social media team at Rackspace. So now I've got a team of six, besides me, six full-time engineers. They're all engineers. They're not PR people. They're not marketing people. They're Linux admins. They're, you know, senior support engineers. And we monitor social media 24/7 and just look for ways to be helpful. And that is our entire social media plan, by the way, is those two words, be helpful.
Interesting, interesting. Boy, you raised a bunch of things I'd like to drill into. How do you choose or select those engineers to be social media, I don't know, lurkers, wonks, whatever you want to call them? Because that's kind of a special breed of person to do that. And then one of my favorite questions to ask in anything is the, you know, so what? And in this context, it's, yeah, you've got all those followers. You got this team of people monitoring and I'm assuming responding to and engaging in conversations. But the so what is, you know, why does anybody care? Is there any kind of measurable impact to Rack or to customers that comes from this?
Yeah, so I'll answer the first question first. How do I find these people? I generally don't find these engineers. They generally have found me and approached me and talked to me about joining the team. At Rackspace, we have a culture that is based on service. So whether it's in our community with Rack Gives Back or the Rackspace Foundation, you know, we actually hire people based on their desire to serve people. So finding an engineer that is, you know, good with customers is normally a rare thing. At Rackspace, it's nowhere near as rare as at any other company I've ever worked at, because everybody was hired for that one, you know, that one core helpfulness, you know, just wanting to help, wanting to do the right thing. So what does it mean? So what? Yeah. I can demonstrate, and I have to my bosses, that's how I've been able to grow the team, that through our social media actions, we've driven millions of dollars of annual revenue just by being helpful. It is amazing. And that's not even talking about churn prevention, which is, you know, the efforts we go to prevent a pissed off customer from leaving. If we add in the revenue from saves, that number gets pretty interesting to my leadership team really quickly.
A save is somebody that calls up and disconnect me, and your engineers come through and save the day and keep them on as a customer and make them happy?
Yeah, there's a good example. A CTO of a major company, right, he tweeted that Rackspace isn't keeping up with his surge demands. So we just engaged with him on Twitter, got him into an email conversation, then finally on the phone. And we found out that what was actually going on was he added a bunch of plugins to his WordPress blog that were just bogging his blog down. So we helped him remove some bad plugins and then find a couple of replacement plugins that worked better. And all of a sudden his site was, you know, like 60% faster. So the next, you know, he sends out a tweet that same day saying how great the support was. But the next day he writes a blog post on his well-read blog that says, if Rackspace keeps this up, you know, they can't be beat or something like that. But that customer was going to churn, right? He was asking other hosting companies, you know, who can host me better than Rackspace? We answered him. Not only did we save the customer, but we turned him into an even bigger promoter.
That's great. That's great. So how do you, as I said before, you know, Rack has always been known for its uncomfortable with the term fanatical support, but, you know, it has been built in from the get-go, and everybody calls themselves Rackers and so forth. But how does somebody who comes from or at a company that doesn't have that type of ethic at the DNA, how do you implement social support, you know, at this level? What are some best practices that people can follow?
Yeah, so first off, it's really difficult to get something like this done in most companies, because most companies, all they care about is the ROI. And for the first 18 months that we were doing this, I just told my leadership team that, you know, I'm measuring ROI on customer smiles and nothing else. So if they wanted anything else from me, then, you know, our expectations weren't aligned. And they were fine with that. They said, just go make customers happy. And, you know, I was hired by the chairman of the company. So he was the executive sponsor for creating the social media team. So that certainly makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, it certainly does, having that kind of a heavy hitter behind you. So.
Right. So anybody who's trying to do something like this, I mean, or kind of do anything in a big company, especially a public company, you know, you've got to have that senior leadership sponsor. So the first thing I would do is figure out whether it's the chief customer officer, if you've got one, you know, maybe it's your CMO, I don't know, but you have to find somebody to be your champion. It's got to be somebody who talks to the CEO, sits in his meetings, really needs that level of championship if you're going to significantly make an impact. And then you need to really pick the right people on the team, right? We do not work normal hours at all. I generally work until about 3:30 in the morning and, you know, work from home almost all the time, because when I'm at home, I'm talking to customers. When I'm in the office, I'm talking to Rackers. I'm not making us any money when I'm talking to Rackers, generally. So getting the executive buy-in, finding the right people to get started, and then set your goals realistically to begin with. Don't show up with a PowerPoint that shows how much revenue you're going to drive when you don't have any Twitter followers yet, because you're not going to drive any revenue until you have a significant number of followers.
What goes into making a significant number of followers? Obviously Rack has some brand pull for that, but you know, someone else doesn't.
Well, we had zero followers when I created the account, so. You know, it built up over time. We didn't get that many followers overnight, but it's built. And we get followers because we're helpful. You know, we don't do a lot of marketing. We will share some marketing links, but we have a criteria for marketing that the content's got to be helpful, and we get to decide what's helpful, not marketing. So if we don't like the content, we don't share it on social media. So most of what you see us doing is helping customers, not pushing product.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And you know, this feeds right into my blog as well, which I'm not blatantly advertising, but so you've got patience, you've got executive support, you have to provide a lot of value, which is, to me, it seems like this is just really basic, obvious stuff, but I'm sure you could write a book on the rest of this. So tell us about some things you learned along the way, and maybe some war stories of what could have been avoided either at Rack or elsewhere that you've heard in the industry if something like this was in place.
So what I've learned is never share the the Twitter password with anybody. Once early on, there were four of us, me and three managers that weren't involved in social media, but they were in my food chain. And somebody got into an argument with a customer on one of our Twitter accounts. It was not the at Rackspace account, but it still bothered me, and nobody would fess up to who it was. So I changed all the passwords, and I'm the only one who's got them now. So knowing who's saying what on your account is really important. So if you're not using something like CodeTweet, we built our own tool in-house so that my employees can tweet on behalf of the Rackspace account, but they don't need to know the password to the account, and everything they tweet is logged, so I know who said what.
Okay.
It's really important. I use separate account, separate tools, separate applications for my personal account and my business accounts. Because once I was at SeaWorld and I tweeted that I was at SeaWorld and having a blast, and I sent that out on the Rackspace account.
Oops.
And yeah, well, I mean, it was just a fun, lighthearted thing, but
yeah.
But customers had fun with it too. You know, they tweeted back, you know, who's watching my servers if all of you guys are on a roller coaster. But that's
an indicator that you have a community that is finding value in being part of that community, that they can have some fun with it when somebody does something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are some examples of really bad social media mistakes, right? Where people said something really personal on a corporate account. That's why I use separate apps. That's why I encourage my employees to use separate apps. You know, if I'm in the actual Twitter app on my Mac, then I know that I'm not tweeting as Rackspace, because I don't have that account set up in the Twitter app. So it's just a simple way not to make that account mistake. What else have I learned along the way? Don't overpromise. And this includes, you know, don't overpromise to your customers or your bosses. I always set the expectations as minimal as I can and still sell the idea. Because if I would have gone into this, what is it, about 3 years ago now, if I would have gone into this and told my managers that, you know, I'd be driving X million dollars worth of revenue and I would have seven, you know, full-time people doing this in 3 years, they wouldn't have believed the revenue numbers, and the headcount would have scared them. So it probably wouldn't have got off the ground. So by starting with just me, and then, you know, I went about a year, I guess, added a second employee, then a year later added another. I mean, that it built it up slowly. And, you know, my team does a lot more than just monitoring social media, though. We do up to 80 events a year, so we're frequently speakers at places like South by Southwest, cloud forums, just everything from a local WordCamp to, you know, the biggest conventions that you can think of. So we travel a lot, we speak a lot, and we also tweet our personal phone numbers quite a bit, which I love doing it. It freaks some people out sometimes. They think that I messed up and meant to send a direct message. But, you know, if my customers can't find me, I can't help them. So I want them to find me. And the easiest for them to find me is call me.
Right. I mean, that gets into something else that I don't really think I've ever really heard anybody talk to in depth when they're talking about social media. Campaign is not the right word, but efforts and initiatives and just incorporating that into everything that they do. Is everybody talks about engaging the customer in personal conversations, but it's always been presented from the standpoint of this is Rackspace talking. This is just Rob talking. And I think what you're building on here, especially with the getting out of the office and getting known personally and individually as Rob and the rest of your crew that are doing this, I think is also a fundamental difference from what I've seen from anyone else. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, so one of the things that I started doing very early on was having a tweet up in every city I visited. So I was in Omaha, Nebraska, which is not a place that, you know, Rackspace gets to a lot. So I think when I was there a couple of years ago, it was probably the first opportunity for a lot of those customers to actually meet somebody from Rackspace face-to-face. So I just sent out a tweet saying, you know, I'm going to be at this location, you know, for the next 3 hours. It was the hotel lobby that I was staying at. And, you know, we had 35, 40 people showed up in no time. And they weren't all customers. Some of them were just geeks who just wanted to come and geek out, and that's fine. But some of them were customers, and some of them became customers. So getting to know your customers, I think, is so important. And, you know, some people think it's creepy, but if I'm in a video conference with a customer and I see a picture of a dog on their desk, I make a note that they're a dog lover, because if I need to send that customer a gift because we screwed something up, or if I find out that it's their fifth anniversary of being a customer or something like that, it's amazing how much joy you can give a dog lover if you buy their dog a gift instead of them. So it's just knowing little things about your customers and paying attention to them, right? We had a customer, they didn't mention Rackspace in the tweet, but they tweeted that all of their coffee cups were broken or the handle or chipped or had the handles broken off. 3 days later, FedEx delivered them a case of Rackspace branded coffee cups.
That's an easy one. Right?
Yeah, they turned that into a blog post. They took pictures of the, you know, everybody holding the cups. It was a no-brainer, right? Probably cost me $12 for a case of cups. So you have to appreciate your customers, and not just when things are going bad.
Right.
It's easy to, you know, send gifts when you screw up and, you know, as an apology. But what's really interesting is when you do something for a customer that they don't expect. Like, I had another customer got married and was honeymooning in Hawaii. And I used to live in Hawaii. I used to be a mayor in Hawaii, so I have some connections there. So I used those connections to find out what hotel he was staying at. So when him and his new wife checked in, they had a bouquet of flowers and a bottle of champagne on ice, you know, happy honeymoon, and, you know, whatever, thanks, Rackspace. That,
nice.
It was not an expensive gesture, and it, you know, it didn't take me much time, but it meant so much to the customer. And, you know, that customer was not a big customer at the time. You know, they were spending, you know, maybe $1,000 a month or something with us, but, you know, now they're spending almost 100 times that.
Wow.
Not because we bought them a bottle of champagne, but during their massive growth, anytime they were questioning, you know, their future hosting needs, that was always in the back of their mind, right?
Right.
I could give a lot of examples of those types of things, but here's one last real fun one. A couple of years ago, we had a customer coming from, I think it was Minnesota. They rented an RV, and they were driving down to South by Southwest, and they broke down outside of Dallas, Texas, like 40 miles out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, geez.
And we figured out where they were at. Oh, they actually tweeted the mile marker they were at. We actually called and found the closest Pizza Hut to this broken-down RV, and we somehow convinced the manager that we weren't crazy and we really wanted pizza delivered to mile marker 42 or whatever it was. So these guys are in a broken-down RV. They had already tweeted that they were hungry, and they get a knock on the door on the side of the road, and they get pizza and soda delivered.
Oh, that's outstanding. It's outstanding. All right, so I mean, obviously you're wired up to think that way, and I presume that you've found those types of engineers who think that way, and you know, I think it's kind of easy for RAC to recruit and find people because you're well tuned at looking for those types of people to do that. But you know, and you've chosen to have engineers on there, and you've mentioned a couple times why we don't have marketing people on there. I kind of bristle at that, and I'll tell you why. Because you know, as a product marketing person, you're supposed to be the ear of the customer, the voice of the customer, and what better way to have that as an additional channel, not only of inbound information, but people that you can talk to, pick up the phone and say, hey, I got a question, or I want to bounce this idea off you. You have that type of relationship built with them through there. And obviously you have to put the reins on them that, okay, you know, you're not going to be compensated for saying anything marketing-ish through this particular channel. But you've chosen to have technical ones. So who else would be on this whole social support team?
Well, we also have a social marketing team at Rackspace. So it's not that we aren't using social for marketing at all. Sure. It's just that the main accounts at Rackspace are not used very frequently for that purpose.
No, and I understand why not. But you know, this is my feeling, is that whoever your lead voice of the customer product marketing person is should also be on that team. But we can argue that over beers. But yeah, so who else and where do you find folks like this?
Where do you find them? I kind of chuckled when you said it's easy for Rackspace to find and recruit people, because we're hiring about 100 people a month right now, and we get about 1,000, I think it's 1,000 resumes for every person that we actually hire. It's actually hard to find a Racker. It's easy to find people who want a job. It's easy to find people who, you know, can't wait to leave at 5 o'clock. We want people who can't wait to wake up and come back in the next day. And that's a really a different kind of person. So, you know, none of my employees on the social media team were external hires. So every one of them was already a Racker. They were working in an engineering role. And, you know, I think in every case, they approached me first. I might have approached one of them. They were already the type of employee who, you know, they volunteer at their kid's school. Maybe they're on the board of directors for a nonprofit. They're always, you know, at the charity events. So there were already these people who like to give. The reason I use engineers is because I want my team to be able to solve problems, and I want them technical enough that we can look at trends and figure out, you know, okay, this is not a broken promise. We've got a broken process, and then we drive that change back through the organization so that we don't make that same mistake again. That's a big part of what we try to do. Now, the funny thing when you're talking about marketing is I'm actually extremely involved in marketing. I created the Rackspace Startup Program, which is a program that partners with startup incubators and accelerators and gives startups free or subsidized hosting for a certain amount of time, as well as some mentorship. And that program started in my group, but you know, it got too big for me to manage in my group. Now it lives in marketing. It's now a marketing program. I hired a blogger named Robert Scoble, who, you know, worked for me on my team. He was not doing social media, he was doing video interviews, but he worked on my team until what he was doing got too big for my team, and now he's reporting into marketing. It's a marketing program. So I don't see that what I'm doing is very different than marketing. I mean, when I'm out there and people are seeing me helping customers, that is marketing. It's also branding.
Right. Absolutely. It's that whole front-to-back customer experience that you guys are known for. So, yeah, I understand that. All right, so you guys are doing it. You've got it running like a well-oiled machine, presumably. You've got feedback channels. You're spending your time in the office telling the rest of the organization what you're doing and providing the metrics on all that. So, and you're proving it. Obviously, you said you're driving millions of dollars of revenue through this. So the $64 question is, why isn't everyone else doing this?
Well, first off, it's different, right? See, very few companies who are actually using social media primarily as a support tool. Most companies are using it purely, they're pushing, they're not listening, they're talking. And there are some companies, you know, Tony Hsieh at Zappos, of course, he does great with the Zappos account, very helpful. You're not going to like this part of my answer, but I think part of the reason we don't see more companies doing this is because the social media accounts are generally owned by marketing or PR and not support. And marketing and PR, love them to death, got to have them, but they have different goals than support-focused people.
Right, right. So and goals is an interesting thing here and a good way to extend this. So what kind of goals do you set for your team and how do you compensate for pushing those goals?
Well, I pay them.
Yeah, obviously, continued paycheck. But
yeah,
you know, do you now have revenue goals that you're held to that you set, or is there other? You know, so it's how do you measure the effectiveness? So upwards, there's that ROI. How do these members know they're doing a good job? The members of your team.
Well, actually, I'm the director of social media. We've actually got a manager who works for me that actually manages the team because I manage more than just social media. So anyway, the type of people that you hire for this role, you know, they basically get paid, you know, their emotional paycheck when they help a customer. That's what they love to do when they solve that problem. That's how they get rewarded. Sure, you know, we've got all kinds of rewards programs at work that we can use and, you know, take team outings and all of that kind of stuff. But honestly, they get rewarded when they fix a customer and the customer thanks them. If they're not, you know, put together that way, they wouldn't be on this team. They wouldn't have made this team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they think that's key. So the obvious question for me is, okay, you told us about the champagne to Hawaii and the Pizza Hut to the broken down RV. I think that's just absolutely brilliant. Do you do the same thing for your team members? When they do a save, do you you know, send them a you know, pack of doggy treats for their dog or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah. Around here, it's probably something more like, you know, a fancy new Nerf gun on their desk.
They are engineers after all.
Yeah, they are engineers after all. So, you know, there's always just little ways. You know, most people aren't motivated. Well, not most people. My team is not motivated by trinkets and toys. They're really motivated by making a difference, making an impact. They want to change the world. And, you know, we think we can do it here one customer at a time. And it's fun.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But the other thing is we do keep things real fun with our group. You know, we've got our own Skype channel that we're in, you know, probably 20 hours a day. And it is the funniest Skype channel on the planet. People working hard but having a good time.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it also begs the question, how come other folks aren't doing this? What do you see when you've been out talking to other people? What do you hear as impediments to why other companies can't pull this off?
I've heard every excuse from, oh, our engineers would never do that, to, you know, my CEO wouldn't spend the money. You know, you're not spending the money. You're making an investment. You're not going to be, you know, getting a return on that investment in the first 3 months. So don't make any promises that you will. But I think people aren't doing it. either because they don't know about it or they're afraid of it. It's so simple to do. Every company should have a social support channel. I just bought an Audi. I love it. You know, the Audi, I started following the Audi Twitter account, but they don't have like an Audi support account, which would be cool.
Yeah, and given their history with the sudden acceleration syndrome about, 25 years ago that cost them the North American marketplace, you'd think they'd be better aligned to something like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, their Twitter account is, it's engaging, and it does reach out to customers. They have problems, but you know that that's not their primary goal, right? You know that primary goal of that channel is to drive Audi sales.
Right.
I think that's why separating the marketing from the support is important, because when if the internet is down, right, if your web server is down and you're a Rackspace customer and you go on Twitter to complain, you don't want, you know, the first thing you see when you go to complain is an ad for Rackspace popping up in your feed. You're mad at me right now. So when we have 180,000 customers, so if rack of servers goes down, who knows how many hundreds of customers that could affect. So you've got customers in pain. If your marketing department isn't aware that you have customers in pain and they're marketing while your customers are in pain, you're pouring salt on their wounds. They're getting even more angry. It's another reason that we have the account credentials managed so closely is, you know, we always look and make sure we know what's going on before we tweet something. It's important to know what's going on with your customers. And you know, of course, when I have 180,000 of them, I don't know what's going on with all of them. And literally at almost any given minute, there's probably one of them who's mad at us for some reason, just because, you know, there's so many of them. Man, I love it when they find me, you know, whether they find me because I tweet my number on Twitter or they just do a web search looking for Rackspace support and they find me. I love talking to angry customers. And
it's an art form, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, so many people don't understand how I could really like talking to pissed off customers. But, man, if I can take a customer who spends the first 5 minutes of the call telling me that I shouldn't breed, you know, I'm incompetent, blah, 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 and, you know, 30 minutes later have them thanking me for my time, that is a great feeling. I mean, that is a sense of accomplishment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. From putting my marketing hat on, the times that I've talked with angry customers, the last round at my last employer, it was after three calls of the same thing, it's like, there's a product and service opportunity here that we're not capitalizing on.
So
it's not just, it's unpleasant. You have to have a thick skin. You don't take it personally and all that other stuff. But you learn, you know, engineers learn more from the bridge that falls down than from the one that stays up.
Yeah.
Customers aren't calling you, they're either happy or they're not unhappy enough to call.
Or they're so angry that they're already calling your competitor.
there is that.
Yeah.
So from, I know we have a lot of product management, product marketing folks that listen in on this broadcast. So what kind of words of wisdom do you have to those folks who want to take whatever best practices away from our discussion?
I think sticking to be helpful is always good advice. You know, I used to tell employees, before you send a tweet, ask yourself if it's going to be helpful or if it's going to be hurtful. And then I started, after time, I realized the be hurtful part doesn't matter, because if it's helpful, then it can't be hurtful. So it just got shortened to be helpful. You've got to know your customers, right? You got to engage with them. You can't talk at them. You have to join their conversations and find out where they're having them. It just happens that, you know, most of our customer conversations are on Twitter. Another company, you know, it's probably Facebook. But you have to figure out where they want to talk. And you have to be human. Even when we tweet using the, you know, at Rackspace account, we still are human. Don't be robotic. Don't use canned tweets. We don't pre-program any tweets. Everything that comes on our account is actually done by a human, you know, typed letter by letter. And I think if you're helpful, you know, where your customers want to hear you at the time they want to listen, I think you're going to do well.
Okay. Kind of down to the end of here, so I'll kind of sum up things that I've heard throughout this. One is you have to have, if you set up something like this, you have to have patience, but you have to have that high level support from executives that they have the same patience that you do. Providing value is key. I mean, that's just, you know, that should be a no-brainer for everybody, but it is all about providing value. At the end of the day, it's not features, it's not wow, look at us, it's not anything else other than solving problems. And you have to have people that are wired up to do this, who that is their, one of their satisfaction components is providing value to others. Another good one, which is to separate your personal and your business accounts, which is very wise. Also, to build up the personas, be, like you said, be human, be real. Yes, it's the corporate account, but it's Bob doing this one and Sally doing that one and Raj doing this one and so on and so forth. So you have to allow those different types of personas or personalities to come out and be recognized and be known. It's not just the, you know, the big corporate name there that's behind it. And also, obviously, and I fully agree, is separate the outbound marketing with the support and have fun. Is there anything else that you want to sum up to add on to that?
No, I think, you know, in my case, I got the title of Chief Disruption Officer because, you know, I fight for customers. I woke the chairman up at 3 o'clock on a Sunday morning because I didn't like how a pointy-headed VP, who's no longer with us, was treating a customer. So I called the chairman and woke him up, and he asked me what I wanted, and I said, you need to call this VP and straighten him out, and he did. And he told me I was a disruptive force. And then, you know, a few weeks later, I had new business cards with a new title, which is, it's funny. I mean, it's a fun story, but the key behind the story is that by doing that, the chairman gave me a big lever to use, right? And everybody here at this company knows that I am going to raise hell for customers. It's what I do. So if I don't think we're treating them right, you can expect me to be knocking on your door. And you've got to have that take no prisoners attitude.
Right.
You can't move the bar or you know, change where you've drawn the line in the sand. Every time you change the step, every time you accept the standard lower, you're lowering the standard.
Right.
So you just have to stick to your guns and, you know, give it time. It will take time to build up an audience. It will take time to build up a portfolio of results.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Rob. This has been a great discussion here. And thank you, Cindy, for letting me sit in. I think it's time to turn it back over to Cindy to wrap it up.
Great. Thank you so much. I've been tweeting up a storm here, taking notes on what you were saying. Thank you so much, Rob, for sharing so much value. And it's certainly how I got in touch with you, because you were out on Twitter being human. So I appreciate the education that you're giving us. It does seem obvious, but not easy to put in place at all. Thank you so much, Tim, for leading a great discussion and asking great questions. I invite you to listen to this podcast. It will be posted at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. Again, thank you to our sponsor, the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management. Please visit them at AIPMM.com. And a shout-out to... Last weekend, there was a product camp in North Carolina, and this weekend coming up is a product camp in Dallas, and I will be capturing the tweets. You could read the events at storify.com/PRODMGMTTALK. Please follow us at our website and on our Twitter account for what is coming up, and listen to us on iTunes. Thanks again, Robert and Tim.
Thank you.
And
all right, thanks a lot.
And have a great week.